This week, we give it two snaps up.
Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 72. Today is June 13th, 2014. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Hey, it's Friday the 13th and a full moon. And CNN was reporting solar storms or something today.
And that must be why people were driving like animals this afternoon, contributing to my rage.
Animals how? Animals fast or animals slow? Like
everything.
Porcupine or cheetah?
Everything you can imagine. Abrupt, slow, fast, all over the road.
Nice.
Get it together.
It's very a middle-aged thing to do, to talk about the traffic, but do you feel like traffic has gotten worse with the advent of the cell phone? We all know you got the idiot with the cell phone that's cutting you off, but I think it's something different than that. I've realized that there's people that just aren't going because of the phone.
Perfect example. I was going to BMAC, which is in Municipal Athletic Complex, the other night on the road that goes by the front of it. I wasn't quite there yet. This little car in front of me.
Smart car.
Not a smart car. A very dumb
car. Dumb car.
In fact, the content of this car was very dumb. Stop at the stop sign. They're just sitting there. Just sitting there, sitting. Like, what? You know, right. What is going on here? So another car in the approaching from the right, they went ahead and went on. So I'm thinking, okay, then now they're going to go. Nothing. Just sat there. Didn't wave me on or anything. So I backed up and drove around and I look over. A young lady sitting there flicking through her phone.
Of course. Yeah, so it's distracted driving, right?
Yes.
Right.
Is that
but
what you're referring to?
I'm just saying it's a completely new phenomenon. I guess it's like when the phones came out and everybody got the phones, it was like, oh no, people are going to be distracted. They're going to run into things, right?
Right.
They're going to not see somebody stop that's going to cause an accident. Well, now we've achieved the next level where everybody's like, well, crap, if I'm going to be on this phone, I better slow down. So everybody's driving 20 miles an hour on the highway because they got the Twitter feed to go through.
Yeah, and they're weaving back and forth, and they don't even know they're weaving
back
and
forth. Right, so it's like, I think we first started, they were like, boy, it's going to be hard to read this phone while I do 60.
Yeah.
And we've gotten smarter, so now we just do 30 miles an hour on the highway so we can read the phone.
They need a special lane for people who are busy texting.
Right, the reading lane.
Yeah, the ditch. That is the lane.
Yes.
Well, there's a good tangent. Sorry to interrupt, Jerry. Go back to your intro.
Yeah. Okay. So, Friday the 13th, full moon, solar storms. It's the end of days. Sounds like a good time to chill out and watch a movie.
Hey.
So the summer blockbuster season is upon us. It's in full swing. And since we spent so much time last episode discussing Roadhouse, we thought it might be fun to spend an episode at the movies and discuss our favorite politically themed films.
Or in Rob's case, a film he never saw in his life.
Not so much a favorite as one he hadn't seen before, and he wanted to make the rest of us watch it. So we each picked a movie, and then we watched all three, and now we're going to share our thoughts about each one. Let me pause for a moment and thank Granite City Food and Brewery for hosting us once again. And also our break music is brought to us once again by the Polish ambassador.
Genius.
Genius.
Oh, so good.
My nickname for Rob.
Thanks.
Okay, so we have three movies. And we were going to start with Jeremy's movie.
Oh.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Thanks for the warning.
Are there spoilers in this part of the
Come
podcast?
Come on, man.
Sure.
It's right there on the script.
we should, let's preface this whole thing by saying spoiler alert.
It's like right. One massive spoiler alert.
Yeah, we are going to talk about the movie, so if you haven't seen it.
Especially if you haven't seen Rob's by now, since it's been out for 60 years almost.
So Charlie Wilson's War, why did you pick this one?
I picked that one because I started with three movies. Charlie Wilson's War, Syriana, and Dr. Strangelove.
Okay.
I picked Charlie Wilson's War because it is one of my favorites. All three of those are really high on my list, but Charlie Wilson is a good combination of Syriana and Dr. Strangelove. Syriana makes me want to jump off a ledge after I watch it. I mean, it's so depressing.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty accurate. It paints the story of how we get into these situations in the Middle East. And,
right.
And just the world order that causes all this stuff. And, you know, what's in the news right now with Baghdad or Iraq and
right.
all the insurgencies. I didn't pick Dr. Strangelove because it's pretty specific to the Cold War, and it's a lot more, not campy, but almost campy.
Yeah.
On purpose, though, right?
Yeah, right. So I didn't pick that because that was too far
in
one direction. But Charlie Wilson, I mean, I don't know how much of it is fact. Obviously, they took some license with the story, but it's a very entertaining movie. Philip Seymour Hoffman is outstanding in this movie.
He's awesome.
He pretty much makes the movie.
Yeah, he steals the show, certainly.
Right, and what is it? Like you can't take your eyes off him, even when he's not even supposed to really be a part of it.
Right.
You know, and then when he's not there, you just can't wait for him to show up again.
Right.
And it's like, what is... I don't know what that art is, because I don't understand acting. But like everybody in that movie is acting. They're obviously acting at a high level, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously he's a respected actor. So you look at it and you're like, you try to dissect what it is. It's impossible to define. But it's subtle and understated, but enough to. I mean,
three Oscar winners, right? As the leads. Excuse me.
Yeah, it's great. I assume you're referring to Julia Roberts. Okay.
Tom Hanks. She's won two Oscars.
There,
what did she win as, like, Pretty Woman or something? I don't know.
Aaron Brockovich.
Okay. Yeah. Which I also hadn't seen.
I think she was nominated, though, in Pretty Woman, but I don't think she won, if I remember right.
I mean, she's a top-notch actress, too, right? But I'm just like, whatever, there's Julia Roberts doing her thing. Well,
yeah,
I didn't particularly like her part of it. No,
but,
yeah, I didn't, right.
Yeah,
but I understand how it fit in.
And I'm not a fan of Julia Roberts
exactly.
at all.
So, like, what is it about this chubby dude with the three names that just makes you just...
Well, he seemed to be one of those people who you almost want to be that guy because he's operating on a higher plane. He has his situational awareness is so far beyond everybody else's.
Right,
he's not afraid to.
Right, but how can he convey that in a way? But they contrast that with the portrayal of his character. I don't know why they made everybody pack on pounds for that movie.
Okay,
like, did Tom Hanks really need to pack on pounds?
So let me back up just
we're
a moment.
Not here to dissect the actual movie. It's here to talk about.
Well, no, I don't mind us talking about that. But for our listeners' benefit, who may not have seen this film, 2007 movie, Tom Hanks, Julie Roberts, Philip Seymour Hoffman, as we said. It tells the story of Charlie Wilson, who is a member of the House of Representatives in the 1980s, was a six-term member of Congress, I think, from Texas.
Nacogdoches, Texas.
And during his tenure, he actually had achieved quite a level of power and respect within the House of Representatives. And was
what time frame? Like they said, 1980-ish, right?
Yeah, it's the 80s. And he was fairly influential for somebody who hadn't been in Congress all that long, and found himself sitting on two pretty powerful committees too. So his claim to fame, and the reason there was a book written about him, was he spearheaded an effort to fund a covert war against the Soviets in Afghanistan. So basically engaged the CIA to provide money and weapons to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan as they tried to repel the Soviet Union after they invaded in 1979. So it's, you know, it's a very interesting story. Largest covert war ever funded in American history. And if you watch the movie, you can see why, because it just keeps spiraling over time.
Started out as $5 million allocation, ended up at $1 billion.
Right.
But shall I cut to the very, what I find poignant about?
Sure, absolutely.
And then we can go from there.
I mean, why is this a, besides the obvious, why is this a political movie?
Well, it shows us how we ended up at September 11th.
Yes.
After this covert war, and it was clear that, you know, we essentially, not we, but Mujahideen defeated the Soviets, drove them out of Afghanistan. We just washed our hands of it. Didn't go in to provide any support.
Right. Infrastructure.
Right. Oh, way to turn it. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, that's great, Rob.
Jeremy doesn't
I don't think that's relevant.
Right. No, I'm just mentioning, they said we did what we wanted to do. We wanted to drive the Soviets out. Did it. Nailed it. Check the box. We're done. Right? That was the point of the movie. Right? No?
Jeremy has a very irritated look on his face right now.
That wasn't the point of the movie.
But that was the point of your political thing. We washed our hands of it because that's because we hate Afghanis. It's that we finished the mission. We did what we wanted to do, so we just get out, right?
Okay, but in Iraq, we weren't just pulling out when he hung that mission accomplished.
It is a charged term that I love to say, I agree with your point. We just said that we went in there to drive out the Soviets, and we did. And so, and the little perhaps hackneyed or awesome quote about the Zen master. I don't know if you guys were a fan of that, but it's like things continue on after you know.
Right.
But we only direct our policies to missions, which is the way the military operates, right? The military doesn't say caretake for this region for two centuries. It says
this wasn't the military saying that though.
Right.
This was people in control of budgets.
Yeah.
Right. Saying that. And is that still going on? Charlie Wilson, there's a scene where he wants to allocate money to build schools and some infrastructure. And they say to him, are we still there? What? Nobody wants to throw money at that, Charlie.
Right. Yeah, and those members of Congress didn't even know where Afghanistan was.
Right.
Yeah.
Another interesting piece of the movie is you'll hear some names in there that at the time they weren't much of anything, and now they're in the news all the time.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Rudy Giuliani is one of them.
That's one of them.
John Murtha.
Murtha. But there's a warning from Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, Gust Avocados, or something like that. Gust. But
yeah.
I never realized how much it sounds like avocado.
Yeah, right.
He says, the crazies are flooding into Kabul like a bathtub drain or something like that. And you know, essentially warning, hey, we need to do something about this. And nothing happens. And now you end up with the Taliban.
Right.
You end up with 1993 World Trade Center bombing. You end up with 9/11. And here we are.
So, after I watched it, when we were kind of discussing this over email a little bit, and I said, you know, the most interesting footnote to the movie and the story is that Charlie Wilson essentially created Osama bin Laden because he was one of the Mujahideen that was being funded to fight the Soviets. And it was the fact that, like you said, after we were done. We pulled out, we were gone. That left a bad taste in all of their mouths and you know, kind of soured them on the United States in general.
Right.
And, you know, Osama bin Laden's probably a psychopath, and you know, it doesn't take much to push him over the edge, and so he goes and creates Al-Qaeda, and, you know.
And he can recruit, because another comment from Gust is, hey, this was a covert war. None of the young people in Afghanistan know we helped.
Right.
Nobody. And the other, I have some notes on, it's all the, there's a, how it was covert was that we were funneling weapons through Israel to, I can never remember, was it Egypt or Saudi Arabia?
I said Egypt.
Well, I think it was Egypt.
Saudi Arabia was helping to bankroll the operation.
They matched
whatever.
They did the NPR matching funds.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's how it got to a billion. Because
Egypt was the one providing the weapons, and then they were delivered to Pakistan and smuggled in over the border.
So it's all these back channel negotiations. You know, in the press, certain countries are enemies, sworn enemies. But then there are all these back channel negotiations that sometimes, depending on who the common enemy is, they are in bed together doing
what people do in
Iran are going to do in Iraq, which I think is interesting. That I plan on Rob bringing up as another diplomatic home run by the Obama administration. Sorry, that was a little side note.
That's episode 73.
So, what did you think of, like, the movie itself, the way it's crafted?
I loved it.
It was crap. Really? You loved it?
Yeah. Rob, we had to pick our favorite political movie, and I...
It was... So you didn't like it?
I did like the movie. I liked the movie a lot. But there was things about the way it was crafted that
Well, you didn't like the lighting or the cinematography? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was the lighting. It bothered me. Like, first of all, I'm glad you picked it, because I did enjoy watching the movie. And I think, when did it come out?
2007, that's what Jerry said.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
4 minutes ago.
I don't remember. I don't listen when people talk. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, the thing didn't come out because of the, because we wanted a historical narrative on Afghanistan. You know, it's supposed to be topical for the, and I thought it was, like we were talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman, genius guy. I don't know, like, and then we should mention that the screenplay, as Jerry pointed out, was written by Aaron Sorkin, who's come up on the podcast before, as the West Wing creator, Sports Night, what else did he do? I don't know, so it has a certain Sorkin feel to it, but, like, there were certain things, now my movie's Manchurian Candidate, which I'm not really defending either, but there are certain things that I thought about the craft of the movie that kind of grated me in some way, like the use of the watch the TV, like the opening scene, you know, where he's in this hot tub and there's 60 minutes and, you know, so now you only got a limited time in movies. I think that's what we forget about movies, and that's what shows up in Manchurian Candidate, you think you have 2 hours to tell a story. It seems like a long time. You got to get a lot of crap in there in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because you see him start, he's going to jam in the Charlie Wilson, personal scandal type stuff in with the, we got to get the Mujahideen story in there. So now he's watching 60 minutes in the hot tub while they're smoking blow while the guy's pitching them. It's just like, well, all right, we got these 5 things to do. Let's just do them all at once.
You had a problem with that?
Yeah, I have a problem with that. It was just like, really? They tune on 60 minutes at the blow party? And that's where he got interested? I don't know. It's a crap thing.
I don't know that that's how it actually happened. I know that he was actually at Caesar's Palace, because that's a matter of public record after they started investigating him.
Right.
And, you know, he gave testimony that he was in a hot tub with this guy.
Okay.
So, I mean, all that actually happened.
Right.
Now, did 60 Minutes come on the TV while he was in the hot tub?
And he's
probably
stop
not.
With your pitch, because I want to hear about these A-rabs.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not going to talk to these two topless babes over here. I'm going to watch 60
really
Minutes.
These bearded dudes that are on the TV.
Well, so that's
and I think there's
can't
some...
I believe that's what you're taking issue with in this movie, though.
There's more.
Well, let's hear it. Maybe something will have merit, because that's ridiculous.
And I
Jerry,
think,
like, edit that out.
It's like, and then there's the two things, like the archetypes, like the you had you Like I was saying, I was fascinated by why they packed weight on everybody. It seems like old Philip Seymour Hoffman, they made that poor guy pack on even more than he had. And poor Tom Hanks, you know, why are you going to make him add 40 pounds? You got these guys, but I think what it... did it really matter? I haven't even seen a picture of the real Charlie Wilson. Was he a big guy? Would it matter?
I've only seen a picture of his face.
Right.
I don't know.
So what I think that came down to, as far as archetypes in film, is you had those guys were you had the Nacogdoches, Texas representative, right? Chubby old dude, player dude. But he makes sure Sorkin loves a smart guy. You know, Charlie Wilson's smart about everything that goes on. He knows where all the countries are. Remember the scene when he points out where all you got the CIA guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, that doesn't look like a CIA, like the classic line that I remember from the trailer where, you know, he's like, well, you're no James Bond. Well, you're not Thomas Jefferson either. You know? It's like, but was he James Bond? You know, like you said, he knew everything.
Right.
They portrayed it like he knew, which is why we love James Bond, right? You love James Bond because he dazzles you with gadgets and ladies and speaking French, but you kind of think, like, he probably knows 18 more languages and knows how to, you know, build a rocket out of, you know, you think
but
he's
that,
like...
I don't think a James Bond type would have worked in this true story.
Exactly. But this guy was a real guy. Right. And I thought that was fantastic because you had these people that were just people, but they knew their stuff, which is a classic.
But you're
kind of
taking
sort of
issue that
no,
they
no,
had
I
10
think
extra
that was
pounds
good.
On them, Rob.
What, no, I don't no, understand. No, I didn't get to my part where I have the issue. That was the good part.
Oh, my God.
That was the good part.
Jerry, just wake me up when he gets there.
No, those were the good things. Because you had these...
You kept saying, why does he have to pack on pounds? And I don't understand why he has to pack
well, I
on
think
the
that's
pounds.
Why. I think that's why. It's because you want these... He wanted to portray these guys that didn't look like movie stars that were really, really smart and doing James Bondy type things. Right? I think that was the point. You wanted Philip Seymour Hoffman's mustached, pinky ring, fat self really being the James Bond. I think that was probably the point.
Yeah.
And somehow where it fell apart in a Sorkin thing. You could read a lot of stuff about Sorkin.
We're back to giving a movie review. I don't understand what...
No, it's fine. So where it fell apart, like one thing... So I was like, that's fascinating. Like, I like to hear Tom Hanks doing his Texas accent, knowing exactly where all the Arab countries were. Like, I thought that was, like, fascinating, right? But then they need to go see the weapons expert.
I'm far from good right now.
Then they need to go see the weapons expert, and, like, they got to portray him as the super smart guy. So... They have him play chess with four guys and fire chess moves. Oh yeah, queen's knight to f7. You know, like you're supposed to. That's supposed to be, you know. But he was really the secret green beret. I don't know. Like, this stuff falls apart for me. It's
okay.
Not the biggest deal. It's just a filmy thing. No.
I don't even know where to go with that.
Jeremy is shaking his head. Okay. So
I have more thoughts.
Oh. Do they relate to anything political? Is it all just a movie
no,
review?
No, I'm talking about the movie review. We're talking about movies. Hey, what's up?
Hey, look who's joining us.
What's up, man? You want to sit over here? Come on in.
Trying to corral a bodyguard, aren't you?
Yeah, beat him up, will you?
No, I can't do that.
Yeah, I think the... So I guess the weirdest thing to me, I mean, because the movie's tightly made. It's a well made movie. And then there's these weird little outliers, like okay, so you know the Russian helicopter's coming in there and he's going to get waxed by the.
It's a Hind, first of all. It's not just a Russian helicopter.
It's a Russian helicopter.
24 Hind.
It's a Hind. What does it matter?
It's one of the baddest attack helicopters in the entire world.
I know a more badass one.
Oh, please.
Anyway.
Go on.
So we know he's coming in there, and you know he's going to get waxed by the, you know, the weapons. I forget, what was this? It wasn't a Stinger thing. It was a Maria Mimer. What was the name of the
I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, so they get the weapon. Do you know what it was?
I thought it was a stinger.
It was a stinger, but they remember when they had it on the PowerPoint slide, and they were like, this is what we need, and it was a...
Oh, yeah, they did have a different name for
anyway,
it. Anyway, whatever.
Because it couldn't be a stinger, right? Because they had to disguise it to look like...
Right, yeah, it couldn't look like it came from the U.S.
Right, but it really was a stinger, whatever it was. So, like, what... And so the Russian helicopter's coming in, and then they put in that, like... He's talking in Russian. They put the subtitles about his girlfriend, and
right.
It's like
it
just seems
so. Back there,
what's that?
It could have been me back there.
It just seemed weird.
Well, so they're trying to generate a little empathy, you know. And they're trying to, you know, not only are these guys mowing down innocent Afghanis while they're flying around in their
attack. They're doing it while talking about banging chicks.
Yeah, but they're talking crap about their girlfriend.
Okay,
and,
because
right.
Well. Also, I think it shows the brutality of it, because there was guys had no care in the world that they were going to get shot at, nothing. It was, all right,
it's another
flight,
day at
we're
going to
mow down these people, and yeah, I'm going to get some coffee after this,
right.
And my girlfriend's bugging me, and boom.
Right. All right.
So you took issue with that.
You may have turned me on that. Like, I see where, you know, it like generated the element of surprise when they really did get blown up, you know.
But well, like, not only that, but you have to feel like they deserved it.
Right. Which is. Yeah.
So, okay, I'll just offer.
Anyway, I thought my movie review too snaps up. I thought it was a good movie. I thought the acting was good. I really got nothing for Julia Roberts, so I didn't really like that part
of
the character.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
But it raised some interesting kind of religious versus secular things. However much Philip Seymour Hoffman wants to do, he can just, like, you can put a bunch of chumps in there, and we'll just watch him run around.
Yeah, I love Philip Seymour Hoffman. I've loved him ever since his line, Greenidge, in Twister. I've been a fan of his ever since.
But what about Scent of a Woman?
He's in that?
I've never seen that.
Even if you told me, I wouldn't remember.
He's one of the students. He's the one who's...
I've never seen it.
Well, you should see it.
Maybe I should. But he's in The Big Lebowski. End of discussion.
Didn't it win Best Picture? Or no. It didn't win Best Picture, but Al Pacino won Best Actor over... Something happened with that movie where it won some award that... I'd have to look. It was one of the biggest Oscar snubs because of Scent of a Woman. No, it was Al Pacino. He won Best Actor over...
Rob, I don't care.
I care.
I don't care. How you doing?
Come on over.
So the only thing I would offer is my favorite quote from the movie. It's the conversation between Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts. And Julia Roberts says... Why is Congress saying one thing and doing nothing? And he says, well, tradition mostly.
That's right.
Well, it wouldn't be Charlie Wilson's war if we didn't say his famous quote about the situation.
Go ahead.
All these things happened, and they were glorious, and they changed the world. Then we effed up the end game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that about sums it up. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do movie number 2, and that's my movie, and you'll just have to...
number 2 movie is more the Rob's choice.
You'll just have to stay with us to find out what that is. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. We are ready to talk about movie number two. But before we do, I want to welcome a guest. Jeremy's brother Matt has joined us once again. Yeah. Our old friend Matt. Yeah. Whoa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Matt is tempting us with a sandwich and french fries.
Which
look, yeah, it looks pretty good.
Bacon tastes good.
Yes. A Royale with cheese.
Maybe we should turn this into a movie review podcast instead of a political one.
Yeah. Just talk about movies all the time.
So I finally found on the Google machine the Al Pacino snub. I don't remember how we talked about Al Pacino. But he won Best Actor for Son of a Woman, which you mentioned. But it was the same year when Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven came out, which I also haven't seen. But Clint Eastwood
also the same year as A Few Good Men.
Right.
A lot of people thought that should have won Best Picture over Unforgiven.
Yeah. Right, right. But then Al Pacino was getting up there. We didn't know if he was going to have another role. So he won for that Son of a Woman. It was a fine movie, but
I lost all respect for the Oscars in 1994 when Forrest Gump won Best Picture over Shawshank Redemption. That was it. I was done with the Oscars at that point. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. So
what was wrong with Forrest Gump?
Shawshank is a better.
Shawshank is the best movie, almost the best movie of all time.
Do you think Forrest Gump just had? There's too much dazzle to it.
Yeah. It wrote itself. It was just history.
Right. And it was the Ewoks from Return of the Jedi.
Right. Right.
I mean, it was just, there was a lot of stuff in there to appeal to, you know.
Right. And some kind of, maybe, I think what was so dazzling was the trickery of the whole thing of like the going back through time and the,
right.
And the, you know, Sergeant John, whatever his name is.
Lieutenant Dan. Come on, man.
You know.
Sergeant John.
Pretty close, right? I knew it ended in
an officer versus enlisted, all
right? Yeah, it's close enough. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's why it won. I think more people were talking about Forrest Gump at that time because of that dazzle.
There were a lot more people talking about it. You're right.
But over time, when you look back as a tighter movie, yeah, I mean, it's like, and they both come on the cable, you know.
Right.
But like when you get the snippet of the Shawshank Redemption, you feel like you're in the snippet of something bigger.
Right.
But
well,
when you watch Forrest Gump, you're like,
I have to finish. Once I start watching it, I have to finish Shawshank, not Forrest Gump.
When you watch the Forrest Gump come on, you're like, oh, this is the cute scene when he's running. You know, it's like little segments of things. Oh, that's bad, but yeah, I could see that.
All right, so Jerry's movie.
Okay, my movie is The Matrix from 1999. And some people might wonder why I picked this, thinking that it's not a political movie. But I tend to think it is. And, you know, I gave both these guys instructions to kind of watch it through a certain lens. And I'm curious to see if it changed their experience watching it at all.
No.
Or if maybe they had seen it that way before. Maybe I didn't.
What's the lens?
Maybe I didn't shed any new light on it, but
Taxation.
I said to look at it as if the Matrix is a metaphor for government.
Big surprise.
Yeah, right. Our listeners won't find that at all surprising, but some people might, because, you know, they took it literally. Like, it's not a metaphor. It's, you know, it's science fiction, but, you know, it's just really this. When the machines take over, and I never viewed it that way. I mean, even the first time I saw it, and I was by no means an anarchist at the time, but I couldn't shake the feeling that, you know, and it's the scene with Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves when he tells him, you know, it's like a splinter in your mind. And, you know, you feel it when you look outside, when you look out your window, when you pay your taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that line that, for me, just kind of sets the entire movie into a different context. And I realize that might just be me.
But, it might be.
But that's what I asked these guys to watch it. And
They did call them agents. I thought about that.
Agents, yes.
And for you, the image of humans piped in, you know, with, you know, little babies and little wombs piped into the government complex.
Right. I mean, jacked into the grid.
Right. May be compelling for you.
That's the NSA right there, right?
And they all have to eat the slop food because, you know, well, you know, yeah, if you pipe into the Matrix, you get your steak, but how about this true slop, you know?
Right.
That's you in a slop shell.
Right. Freedom is not necessarily pretty.
Right, right.
Well, talking about the NSA, I think it's interesting that they have to use landlines to, you know, get in and out of the main. That's the safe,
right,
safe
right.
way.
That's the safe medium of communication.
There's still some, I don't know if I would say truth to that, but evidence of that maybe.
Right.
I took down a few notes.
All right.
Lines.
Go for it.
People who are in the Matrix, they haven't been awakened, are hopelessly part of the system, and I think we see that. Rob, some of us see that this system that's been built, it gets people hooked to it, and you know, so they're just hopelessly part of it. They depend on it. They haven't been liberated from it, and they will fight to keep it. They will do, blind to anything else, they will keep that. Even they don't even realize how ingrained it is in them and they in it. Of course not, because you don't see. Because the world that has been pulled over your eyes, another quote from the movie, you live in it. It's everything. That's what you see, and you aren't willing to look at anything else. You're born into a prison for your mind, Rob. These are all Morpheus.
Morpheus.
I thought it was interesting that the pills, what color are the pills that they offer? Speaking of government, red and blue.
Indeed.
Take the red pill, Rob.
And what does morph mean? To change.
Morph means to change, but what is a red pill? Red? Let's see, what party, what side is affiliated with red? I don't remember.
So I'll interject here at this point and remind our listeners maybe that this is not the first time we've talked about The Matrix. Rob and I actually did an entire episode talking about the movie. It was episode 5.
How about that?
5.
I don't even remember that.
That was way, way back. But yeah, we did. I think we talked about that actually, was the red pill versus the blue pill. I don't know. I have to believe they chose those colors because of that, but I'm not sure that they were trying to make the statement that, you know,
right, I'm not,
that,
well,
that the Republican conservative
right. is... I'm only doing that to get it, Rob, because I certainly don't believe the Republican Party is any kind of great savior and it's going to break us free from the Matrix. I mean, they are part of the Matrix.
Yeah, they could have picked any two colors, though, you're right, and they picked red and blue. Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah, and the names in the movie are symbolic. You know, you got the Neo anagram for one. And then I was watching stupid E. I can't take credit for this because it was on the stupid A&E story notes. But the opposite, the guy who eats the steak because he just wants the steak, he knows it's fake, but it's juicy, named Cypher, and in Greek or whatever it is, Latin, I don't remember. I was probably drinking when I watched it. But, you know, it represents the number 0. So they're like the 0 and the 1. You know, they're the two parts of the computer. You know, Neo is trying to break him out. He's the high bit. You know, and Cypher's trying to just say, screw it, let's stay in. He's the 0 bit. And the Morpheus meaning change. And, you know, there's
a lot of symbolism
in it. The biggest mystery of
all. And I don't even want to get into, like the Christian symbolism, because I've read, you know, reviews online of people.
Oh, I haven't heard this.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
hook me up.
Just
an overview.
Well, just that Neo represents sort of a Christ figure, you know, and that he's sacrificed, dies, and then he comes back to life, and he saves everybody, and, you know.
Right, there's a lot of saving.
Right.
You're the one to save.
Like Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
Christ figure.
Yeah, look at that.
Takes him fishing. Takes his 12 friends fishing. Right.
What about the, nice. What
I
about
didn't make
the,
that up. I didn't read it.
So. Right. But what about the mystery of, the biggest mystery of The Matrix is why the other Matrix movies suck so bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't watched the other two since they came out in the theaters. I went to see them in the theaters.
Because they suck.
And I was very disappointed at the time. I am curious, though, to go back and watch them again now and see if they still are terrible or, you know, if maybe my expectations were just too high because, I mean, The Matrix was such a kick-ass movie.
Right.
It was really hard to live up to those expectations.
I think watching The Matrix in right now is like to me, it's analogous to listening to The Beatles. Me, as when I was born, 1974... I cannot hear the Beatles without thinking Burger King commercials and everything that was built upon what the Beatles did.
What?
You can't, it's hard, I can't hear the Beatles for what they did when it was that time because I hear, you know, it's been so co-opted through commercials and then all the music that I've listened to has been influenced by the Beatles. So you can't see, it's hard to listen to the Beatles for when it came out.
Yeah.
And The Matrix is the same way. It's like when you watch it now, even I was there when I watched Matrix in the theater. It's even hard to remind myself of how completely new everything looked. Like,
right.
And like the kung fu and the rotating camera.
Right,
well, there's
time.
800 rotating cameras going on in the theater now, you know?
Yeah,
but that was the first rotating camera.
There were some groundbreaking special effects there.
Right, and it wasn't like we do now, which is like, well, hey, 8 explosions are good. How about 400 explosions? You know, it was a whole new thing. While you watched it, you felt like you were just seeing something completely brand new.
Right.
And maybe that's why the other movies were disappointing, is because, you know, it lived in the same environment, so you didn't get that, like, dopamine rush of, oh my God, I'm seeing something completely new.
Right.
Well, I think what I remember, I never saw the third one. What I remember from the second one was it was like they just multiplied the number of fight scenes and made them longer and more intense. Oh, now we're going to fight on the top of a semi-tanker truck.
Right, but that's not really what made the first one good. Right.
Yeah, but they do that. I mean, they did it with Man of Steel.
Right.
They did it with the Transformers movies.
It's just endless fight scenes
that are quick at it. It does nothing for it. It takes me completely out of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, and it's not really... And it's... It's the classic example of an artist or a product not understanding their own product. That's not
right.
The fight scenes, you don't watch The Matrix for.
It was very disappointing to watch the second one because you do realize, hey, the Wachowski brothers completely missed the point. Like, you wonder, like, okay, are these guys really the geniuses we thought they were when they made the first one, or they just get lucky?
They happened upon a movie that was a success.
Yeah, because like they totally removed everything that was good about the first one and distilled down all the crappy parts.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
At least that's the way I felt after I saw that. And to be honest, after I saw the second one, I was willing to reserve judgment until the third one because I was like, okay, it's a trilogy. It's the middle movie. You know the middle movie's not going to be as great. That's always the case in a trilogy. But man, the third one just completely failed to deliver. It was just terrible.
Saw the third one and I think the casting of Keanu Reeves. I mean. It's got to be intentional. I mean, the guy just like, whoa. You know what I mean? He does nothing through the whole movie. And it's like,
I am an FBI agent.
Yeah, you're like, is this guy the acting genius that Philip Seymour Hoffman is? And I just don't see it?
He's by no means a Philip Seymour Hoffman. But I do think he's underrated as an actor. I mean, I've seen him in a couple of things that I thought he was very good in. And
A Walk in the Clouds.
Walk in the Clouds is
Break
a
point,
good, great example.
Point Break, whatever.
Yeah, Point Break's not bad. I mean...
Bill and Ted's Excellent
Adventure. No, I'm not going to go there.
I was saying A Walk in the Clouds kind of half jokingly because I thought that movie was way over the top sappy.
Well, it is sappy.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's a romantic comedy. Well, not really a comedy. Really. It's romantic. How do you
Jerry
do
and I did not see it together, by the way.
How do you do romantic without it being a little sappy?
Well, you there's sappy and then there's sappy. And
well, this, I'm a big fan of wine. You know, so Walk in the Clouds kind okay. of you
well,
know,
I think
was up
that's
my
what,
alley.
Where he goes and finds the one,
right,
the
yeah.
one vine that is still viable after the fire.
After the fire, yeah.
The fact that I remember this, having only seen it once 20 years ago,
right.
It must have been compelling.
It's a good movie, though. And we'll ask our waitress, Andrea.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Have you ever seen A Walk in the Clouds with Keanu Reeves?
I have not seen A Walk in the Clouds, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. All right, I was going to ask your opinion. I think so. I think it's good.
Have you seen The Matrix or Charlie Wilson's War?
I have seen The Matrix, Charlie Wilson's War now, but I know what you're talking about. So I should see that, and I should see A Walk in the Clouds. So I will watch them, and then the next time you come in, I will tell you.
All right, fair enough.
That will be my homework for tonight.
Yes.
That's what we do. We like to give assignments. How fun.
All right.
All right. So are we ready to move on to our third movie?
Are we? I don't know.
Do you have more
no,
to say
I,
about
it? No, I don't have more. I just was...
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Rob's movie is The Manchurian Candidate, as he mentioned earlier.
You're the snoring sound.
The original from 1962, starring Frank Sinatra, Janet Leigh, Angela Lansbury, and not the remake from 2004 with Denzel Washington and Liev Schreiber. And I had not seen this movie before either. I don't know. Had you seen it, Jeremy?
No.
Okay, so none of us had seen it before.
Even though it was Rob's favorite.
The Manchurian Candidate, I mean,
give us a synopsis.
It's an iconic film.
Right.
I mean, the story, anyway, has become iconic within our pop culture.
Right.
Before I watched it, I actually searched for the hashtag Manchurian Candidate on Twitter, and I was amazed that how often it's used.
Right.
Usually in reference to Obama.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that was what I was going to talk about. I mean,
and honestly, I cannot figure out that connection. So maybe one of you guys can explain that to me.
Right. Well, he's installed by the Muslims to
exactly
bankrupt the United All right, States.
That's what it is, right.
Yeah, so Rob, give us the synopsis of the plot for the people who
right.
haven't seen
right.
it.
Right, so how this came up is we decided to pick our favorite political movie, of which I had zero. So I have not been watching movies in recent past. And so I Googled awesome political movies, which is how we solve all problems with Google, because I'm attached to The Matrix.
Professor Google.
And I clicked through there, and I found The Manchurian Candidate, which actually I'd never seen before. So it obviously wasn't my favorite when we picked it. But that's exactly why I picked it, because I kept hearing it being mentioned in relation to Obama.
Right.
Especially in 2000. I don't think it came so much up in the recent election. So essentially what happens is a group of army men are on patrol in Korea, and they get kidnapped. What's that?
During the Korean War. Not
right.
Like yesterday.
Not yesterday in Korea, right. So the movie came out in 1962, right at the height of the... I found out later that the movie was released at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis and the kind of the commie scare. And they get kidnapped, and they go to Manchuria, which I found is in the northeast of China and close to Russia. So the Russians and the Chinese are working together to and they demonstrate this new brainwashing program. And essentially they get the kind of the main character to basically do their bidding at any time once he sees the Queen of Diamonds as a card. So,
right,
so they can kind of
trigger.
They can kind of make him do whatever they want. They say, "Oh, would you like to play some solitaire?" And he plays solitaire. Then the Queen of Diamonds shows up, and then he goes and kills people. And so then he's handled by Angela Lansbury's character, who is a political operative and a communist trying to get
and his mother,
which is awesome,
yeah.
which we'll get to. To try to get him kind of in the political ranks, and so it's the communist external force, your Russians and your Chinese, working together to brainwash Americans and install them in the highest reaches of government to enact their commie will. And so that's what came out with the Obama stuff, and that's why that hashtag is coming out, is exactly what Jeremy said, that somehow Obama was
so my problem, you know, with
a
that
Muslim insurgent that's been inserted into office to bring Sharia law into the states or something.
So I get all of the conspiracy theory there, but my problem with it, you know, the reference to this movie is that's not what the movie was about.
What
right?
was the movie about?
Well, I mean, the guy they brainwash is not the guy who's running for office trying to get into a position of power.
Right.
The guy they brainwash is an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to kill other people in positions of power.
Right.
So it's not quite the same thing.
Right. So
that's why it didn't make sense to me that they would say, okay, even if you were to expand your mind and accept the fact that Obama had been brainwashed in some way.
But his mother was in a position of power and was an agent of theirs because she would have essentially been first lady or...
Okay, but she wasn't brainwashed.
She wasn't brainwashed, but she was their agent.
Right. And it raises the question...
she's not the Manchurian candidate.
No,
but who is the Manchurian candidate?
Well, obviously the guy who had been to Manchuria.
Who? The
Raymond Shaw. All of those guys. And then he was the main one. But, you know, before...
Right,
interpretation.
Do you think the assassin was meant for political office? I think he was because the Frank Sinatra character had to give him the Medal of Honor. They were working him into that office. He wasn't supposed to be just the assassin, I don't think.
Well, but if you were going to do that, why would you risk him being caught as an assassin for killing somebody?
Yeah, right. That doesn't really quite make sense.
No.
Yeah. So,
but there was a part in the middle that said, "Oh, we can't do this because we needed to give him his Medal of Honor." Well, if you're just making a trained killer, you don't need to give him a Medal of Honor,
right?
So during the time, I was like, "Oh, they're grooming the brainwashed guy."
And that would have made more sense,
right?
But he even says, "Oh yeah, giving me the Medal of Honor, that'll look really good for your campaign."
Oh, right.
His stepdad was running for.
So you think that's what it was? I think it could be seen either way. Because I kind of thought that they were grooming the brainwash man to be the.
But Rob is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. That is the line from the movie when they're. All of the other brainwashed members of his patrol from Korea are asked what they think of Raymond Shaw. That's the response that they've been programmed to give.
I think that,
and they even admit they hate. They don't know why they say that.
Right, because they hate the guy.
They're in the Matrix. I think the get Jeremy's little jibes over there about the movie being a little boring. And there were, I have to admit, I did watch it late at night. And there was a certain time when I thought I was about to nod off.
It is slow in places.
But over time, there's things to think about. It's on there on my list of things to think about. Like we talked about the Obama parallels, and there was the weird Lincoln foreshadowing, which I tried to get onto, but I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah, so there were a lot of Lincoln references.
Right, so
you had
the Lincoln portrait when his reflection was on there when he was talking, and then he went to the costume party as Lincoln. I'm like, something's up here, but I'm an idiot when I watch movies in real time. I'm fooled by every little trick. Do you guys really predict the future when you watch movies? You're like,
depends
on the movie.
Depends on the movie.
Right. Sometimes.
Most of the time, I just watch I just drool and watch the movie. And only later when I go back do I see stuff. But I was like, it was tickling my spidey senses that something was up. And of course, he gets assassinated, you know, by the gunman, you know. So I was like, oh, you know.
Sorry. Yeah. Now Matt doesn't have to watch it.
Right. So I was like, oh, nice trick, because I mean, here's my theory about these old movies, and maybe a part of my generation was I was always told, hey, these old movies are good, black and white, that must mean it's a good movie. It's like, no, these there was gobs of schlock and crap that was thrown out there.
Right.
They had movies that came out in 3 weeks' time. They would write them in 2 weeks, file the actors in there, and the movie was done in 3 weeks. The movies were crap, you know.
Well,
so was this movie just popular because it came out? And then, I start seeing kind of the Lincoln thing and the weird why do you think, for example, that they dressed up the assassin guy Raymond Shaw as a priest at the end?
Hold any significance for me.
Because at the end, he wears his Medal of Honor and he's wearing the priestly garb, like he's kind of a holy character. Like it's like his redemption moment, you know?
Yeah, I guess you could say.
I mean, you could have had him dressed as a cowboy. I mean, you could do anything, right? But they chose to dress him as a priest, and I was like, that was weird.
So,
and then the Janet Leigh character.
Oh, get me started.
I thought that was like a complete, like, misplaced, botched, whatever.
She had no reason to be in the movie.
Indeed.
Well, it was clearly, let's get Janet Leigh in the movie so that, we can pack the theater.
Right.
Because Janet Leigh is hot, and, people will buy tickets to see her.
That was the most disappointing thing
in the whole thing. Because her role added absolutely nothing to the story.
But
it didn't even make logical sense.
It didn't make any sense.
Like, she falls in love with Frank Sinatra's character so quickly that either you had to believe she was in on the conspiracy, or that was just the way things were done in the movies back then. That people fall in love instantly so that they can get to the kissing. Because the kissing is the titillating part in the 1960s, right? That's going to put butts in seats. You got to have people kissing.
So that was the most disappointing thing. They meet on the train. They have that weird stilted conversation that almost like they're trading passwords. And I'm like, something's going on here.
Right.
And then it turns out nothing's on there. She's just in there because she's blonde.
Right.
And,
and he's not even looking at her most of the time when he's talking. It's almost like he's been hypnotized.
Right.
And he's just giving the canned response to everything she says.
Right. And I'm talking about these tight movies. Like, a tight movie should be like a short story. Not like a novel. It should be packed.
Right.
And you can't waste time. And there's times in that movie, and in movies that we don't like, especially some of the old movies, you're like, you could take out that red pen, baby.
They could have done that story in 90 minutes or less.
Right.
Would she really go after her? If you're on a train, you're a lady, and some guy's trying to light his cigarette and he can't light it, and then he freaks out and knocks over a table and bolts, would you really go after him?
So during the train scene, I'm like, obviously she's got a part in this conspiracy. But then at the end, she's just like pretty blonde Frank Sinatra girl. Like, come on.
Right.
Right.
And she's his first phone call when he gets arrested. Come on.
But the best best part of the movie, which we haven't gotten to, is as I went and read about this a little bit, is the incestuous relationship between the Angela Lansbury character, the mother of Raymond Shaw, because he's got his hatred of the mother. And in the movie, in the book, I found out that they actually have sex with one another. Can I say sex on the podcast?
Yes.
So there's some mother daughter sex going on.
Oh my!
In
I
the
didn't
book,
know that.
But in the movie, they couldn't. There's no chance in 1960.
Well,
so they do that weird
at that time. Kissing is the surrogate for sex, right?
And that kiss was so weird.
Yeah,
and
it was
like
awkward
and kind of mouthy, but not really, and kind of I don't know. I was like, yes, this, there's freaky.
Yes.
It was the exact opposite of the Janet Leigh thing. Like that was when you're like, there's a lot. There's some layers here. There's things going on. And the Janet Leigh thing is like, so you need Frank Sinatra to talk and you want to put a blonde in the background.
Right.
Come on. So there's definitely some fluff in there. But there was also a scene. I also read about this. I can't take credit for this. There's a part where Frank Sinatra, he's talking with his intelligence buddies, and he mentions this Greek play or these two Greek, And I was like, whatever, Well, though in grand old Wikipedia, it says that in that thing there was an incestuous relationship, and the son finally kills the father or something, classic Greek kind of play type stuff. But he kind of whips that out. And it comes back to your Charlie Wilson's War, where you have these kind of like Frank Sinatra's not portraying himself to be a genius in that movie, you know?
Right.
But over time, you're like, oh, he really does have his, you know.
Yeah, he is kind of sharp.
You kind of have these kind of unexpected kind of geniuses in those movies.
Yeah. So the premise of the story is interesting. And I just found myself wishing that they had concentrated on that,
right,
and told that story instead of adding all of these distractions, you know, like why does Raymond Shaw have to fall in love with this gal and then lose her for a couple of years and then find her again and then they get married and then she dies? I'm like, really?
Right.
What, it's you just... like older movies weren't all about telling that kind of story. It was more about drama,
Wow,
we're putting on a movie. We're putting on
a... Because the point of that was that he was so brainwashed and sick that he would kill his only love, you know, because of the Queen of Diamonds. You know, that was the point. But we already got that message before then.
Right.
You know, so why go through the little dreamy kind of you know, scenes on the lake side?
Right.
And, you know,
and she's like sucking the poison out.
Right. Yeah.
Ooh,
metaphor.
Watch this movie.
Right. Yeah, so I'm watching that.
Matt's looking at us like, what? Maybe I need to watch this movie.
Right there, so they go through the... so they go through, the commie part and the brainwashy part and the political part, you know, and you're fascinated. And then there's, you get the fluff of messing around on the lakeshore, and you're just like... And that's the part of those movies I just like...
Yeah.
Come on, you lost me. I mean, this might be a generational thing, but there is good stuff in there. And I feel like now at least the three of us, when we hear people bandy about such a thing, we'll at least know what the original...
True. At least we know now. All right. So we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dig into a little listener feedback. So stay with us. We are back. We're going to talk about a little listener feedback we received from our listener, Eric. Eric had this to say about our last episode. We were talking about capital punishment, and I guess we kind of got off on the subject of debtors' prisons and how things would work in Jerry World if,
I'm not sure we talked very much about capital punishment, actually. Maybe not.
Happens. Anyway, Eric says, I'm back to the idea that Jerry's World only works if everyone is adult, altruistic, and above average intelligence. In a completely free market, anarchistic society, I don't see how you'd realistically control portions of society that believe in vigilante justice. Even in the protection agencies, you'll still have corruption, bad apples, etc. I would say, yeah, that's a fair criticism. We're certainly not. We're certainly not saying. I have never said that Jerry's World would be utopia, that it would be perfect. I think it eliminates some of the systemic coercion and oppression that we have under our current system. but it certainly wouldn't be perfect, and it certainly wouldn't eliminate vigilante justice, but we have that now under our current system, right? It does happen from time to time. You don't hear about it as much today as you did, say, 100 years ago or longer. But
you did recently hear about the father who went took a baseball bat to the 42-year-old teacher who was sending dirty text messages to his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently he's not going to be charged with anything. I was kind of surprised to see.
It happens.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I guess the only thing I would maybe take issue with is the fact that he said it only works if everyone is adult, altruistic, and above average intelligence. I would say certainly adult. And I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation that we allow the adults to run society instead of the children. Altruistic? No, not necessarily. But I think it does require that everybody be engaged to a degree more than what we have under our current system. I mean, we have the luxury of allowing a vast majority of people to not be engaged. I mean, they're not informed. They don't know what's going on in our country. They don't know what's going on in their government. They don't even know how government works.
And including yet, people in our government.
Right. And I mean, you know, we allow them to continue to live here and be a part of our society, even though they're not informed and they're not engaged. I think this system that I'm talking about, there is an assumption that people are going to be engaged more so than they are now.
I agree with that.
But how would you... You wouldn't enforce that. You would
well, I wouldn't enforce it, but I mean, it would be
It's one of your. It's one of your. What do they call those things?
Tenet. Math.
Axiom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I revoke my degree now. it's one of your axioms. You kind of assume it to be true for your thing,
right? And the reason I'd assume it to be true is people today maybe don't spend as much time researching products that they buy because they assume that the government is there, investigating, making sure that you know all the manufacturers are following certain regulations, that they're producing safe products. They don't have to worry about something that they buy at Walmart is going to kill them when they take it home, right? Because we do have the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and we have these other agencies that are supposed to be looking out for people's best interests. And I think that becomes a crutch over time, that people are just naturally going to rely on that, and they're going to say, well, I don't have to worry about these things because I'm paying my government to do that.
Is it possible that's more efficient than everybody figuring
point simply is, in the absence of government, people are no longer going to make that assumption. They're not going to say, I don't have to worry about this because the government's worrying about it for me. Well, the government doesn't exist anymore. So, yes, you do have to worry about it. And it means that they are, by necessity, going to be more engaged.
You're saying it's not so much an axiom, but it would be a natural result of the system that people would be engaged because they would have
to. I think we're almost, I don't want to say worse than that now because of online reviews. I do more research now than I've done.
Yeah, right.
Say,
I do
15
too.
Years ago.
Yeah,
and you have to filter out the people who are paid to say good things about a product or bad things about a product,
or the idiots that write bad reviews because they don't understand what the product was for in the first place.
Right.
This printer isn't making me toast.
So, I don't know that I look to the government for that. Maybe I do, and I don't realize it.
Maybe
I do. But what was I going to say? I don't remember. It was something.
Something about
your altruism. Oh, I know what it was.
Go ahead.
I feel like you were saying maybe not altruistic, but need to be engaged, and we have it's a luxury that we can absorb all the people who are not. I don't think it's a detriment now. It's becoming a debt burden of uninformed participants.
Yeah.
And it's tipping over the island. To what was that guy's name? I can never remember.
Hank Johnson.
Reference Hank Johnson is tipping over the island.
One last thing. Go ahead.
And then the altruism. Maybe not. Maybe we don't need altruism, but I feel like we're operating without consequence. The blinders are on, and I need to do this, and I'm going to do this. That guy's trying to get to a job interview, and if I cut this off, it's gonna. I feel like the consequences are just out the window now. This is what I need. I think we're there.
Yeah.
And I think that's very bad.
No, I agree. But I guess I would ask, altruism, is that not part of human nature?
It is not enough a part right now. But it's a part of human nature, and let's help the people in Haiti who just had an earthquake.
Right.
Hashtag Haiti earthquake helper. I did a good thing.
Right.
Yet I just drove over my neighbor's yard because I was texting while I was driving, and I just drove over their mailbox and then didn't leave a note or what, you know. It's this weird duality of.
I guess I'm optimistic about that in particular. That you know, people want to be altruistic. I think that is part of our nature as humans. I think people who aren't that way are the outliers. They're the sociopaths that don't have empathy for their fellow humans.
I think Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew have references, mainly Adam Carolla. He talks about the narcissism now.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm altruistic because I want to say I'm altruistic.
Right,
because
look at me, I help this person over here.
Hey,
right.
look.
Right.
And it's, he talks about Facebook and these postings about, I helped this person. Oh, it was tough.
Right.
It's the humble brag. It's the other.
That's what Jesus said about the Pharisees, right? That they only help the poor because it makes them look good.
I didn't hear him say that, so I don't know.
Yeah. You said that. Good job.
I'm paraphrasing, perhaps.
Is it on YouTube?
I think so. Yeah. That's the problem with the internet. You can't tell if a quote is real.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I had.
Talking about the Reading Palace? Is that what you call it, Rob?
The Reading Palace.
It's gone past the room.
The Reading Room has gotten so big, it's no longer a room.
Rob still hasn't posted one link.
Yeah, that's your homework for next episode is to post one story to the Reading Room.
Three things I highlighted. One is Adam Carolla's new book, President Me. I have it. I've started reading it again. He's spot on. Cracks me up.
He's like your muse.
Sadly,
I
haven't had enough time to read it, but
he's like your prophet. Your muse.
I would follow him off a cliff, I think. And then he would make fun of me. Follow me off a cliff.
What the hell's wrong with you? Why are you following me?
Second one is John Stewart trashes hypocrite Harry Reid over attacks against the Koch brothers.
Yes,
this is,
that is worth watching.
I think I watched that one.
Absolutely.
Rob, you need to watch your savior, Harry Reid. And
I think I watched that.
Well, what a dolt.
He is.
And third one. Atlantic hurricane season begins Sunday. Well, this was a couple weeks old, I think. Will record streak without a major hurricane landfall end? This may be shocking, but we haven't had they categorized a level 3 or higher hurricane make landfall for like 3,100 days or something like that. I bring that up because what did they call Hurricane Sandy that hit the eastern seaboard, New Jersey?
Right, they called it a superstorm.
They called it Superstorm Sandy. Did you know that it was actually just a tropical storm by the time it made landfall? Rob is wrinkling his nose, and if it had been a hurricane, it would have been a Category 1.
It whoops some tiny.
A tropical storm can do that, but it wasn't.
So
it
doesn't matter what
storm.
You call it.
Exactly. So why call it a superstorm?
It was
a tropical storm.
Because it was a storm that was super.
It is, and it's.
But
you know, Katrina.
Sympathy, wasn't it a major event, or was it not a major event? It seemed major.
It was a major event, but it was not a superstorm, Rob. That's the point.
It
the
was a storm that was super.
No, it. The media takes something and they brand it, and then all of a sudden it plays into their agenda of. Oh, climate change. Oh, we had a superstorm that we've never experienced before. Look at all this damage. Look at this. They keep showing the same pictures over. Okay, second part of that, Hurricane Katrina that hit New Orleans. Bush was just, he was awful. He was a villain. He was this. He was that. Similar things happening in New Jersey. Things not being rebuilt. People displaced. No progress, no coverage. But it was a super storm, so we can't, you know, that was different circumstances. That was a super storm they had.
What was the death toll between those two
storms? I don't
storms?
Know, Rob. I don't know the numbers.
Let me look it up on the Google
okay,
machine, and
Google
I'll post
up
it up
the
in the reading palace.
And you do that. The point is,
I think Hurricane Katrina was a human catastrophe. I think Hurricane Sandy was a property catastrophe.
I think so.
That's what I think. We'll have to Google it up.
People refused to leave for Hurricane Katrina. They refused to leave their homes. And
we'd have to look.
Living
we could,
in a low-lying area as they were, it was more detrimental.
We could look at that.
You could keep denying and just kind of casting off what
I mean,
I'm trying
a,
to say
it's
here.
It's a little bit of blame the victim. You got to worry about blaming the victim, you know?
Blame
well,
the,
you got you,
not what
you
I'm
got
trying
drowned.
To say,
it
that's
must be
not
your
what
fault.
I'm trying to say. No, I am saying there is a difference in the way these are being presented, in the story we're being told,
that,
and that's a problem.
We'll have to investigate that on a future episode.
All right. Well,
but I do. All I would offer, and this is kind of the well-trodden path. But if you want to peg the media on branding a storm being more than it is. Those motivations are not liberal motivations. Those motivations are conservative motivations. They're motivated
you
by...
You are wrong.
I am completely right. They're motivated...
Liberal media
no,
is a
there's nothing liberal about
agenda?
It. No, there's nothing liberal about it. The reason why they trump every
Who's
winter...
They? Who's they?
The media. The reason why every little snowflake, pissant storm that comes around they got to give a name to, why do they do that? Is it because of climate change? No. It's because they want to trump up everything that comes around to get the most page clicks, views,
you go
crisis.
To capitalism again. All
it's
right.
capitalism
okay.
at work.
Yep.
That's exactly what it is.
Yep.
That's why when a little storm comes around, it's a little little snowstorm that's been through the Midwest 400 times, they got to name it, oh, this is Snowstorm Ricky. Or
so you don't think that has anything to do with climate change?
No.
The agenda there?
No. I think it's all about dollars. Hey, look, we got a snowstorm. It's pretty slow on the Weather Channel this week. Let's make a huge deal. Have you ever watched just even the local news, KSTK?
It was almost unbearable
As we've learned, the storms are controlled by Deerbergs and Schnucks, right?
Right. And people wearing inappropriate clothing in the Middle East. The several clerics have come out saying that caused earthquakes.
Yeah,
and
that
some
too.
Other stuff, but. I would, yeah. Well,
I've seen
okay,
some
you're talking about the coverage. Talking about the coverage. Here's a change how society has changed based on this coverage. I've overheard many of my coworkers. They talk when these storms come through. They'll be talking the next day. Yeah. I was watching the radar, and you know, I had that hook echo coming across. I may have talked about this before. Saw the hook echo, so I knew we needed to head down to the basement. And you don't even know what a hook echo is. You didn't know what it was 5 years ago, and now you're just saying hook echo because you think it means a tornado. And it's ridiculous the coverage that we have.
Yeah,
but it's not a superstorm.
But how does KSDK get you to watch about the hook echo? Do they say, oh, we have a mild thunderstorm today. It could be bad in places, but other places it's just going to be rain. No, I mean, if you've ever tried to market your own thing, you gotta drum up fear and panic.
But listen,
it's fear and panic.
Listen to what
it's
they were saying
change.
Saturday when the Belmont Stakes was on. And they were interrupted. I mean, it was all the coverage
of the
storm.
Me and the kids were in the basement.
I was barbecuing. I didn't have the TV on. I walked outside, dropped steak on the grill. Tornado sirens start going off. Like, what? If this tornado blows away this steak that I've been wanting for a week now,
I'm going to slap Mother Nature outside her head.
But they kept saying, they kept talking about, well, we're going to go over here to Max 1 and Max 2. And, you know, they have names for their different radar systems and whatever. And
awesome names.
And then they kept talking about how, well, we're required to have this coverage right now. We, you know, I know you want to watch the Belmont Stakes, but blah, blah, blah. Like, steaks? I'm worried about this steak out here on the grill. Belmont, yeah, I'm kind of watching, but. But they were talking about it like they had to do this. So who is mandating this coverage? Is that the,
or maybe they're not really mandated, that, but it's not a.
I don't know. You're maybe seeing, it's the National Weather
you're in
Service.
The Matrix.
Maybe it's the FCC. I don't know.
So if there's a storm coming,
because I remember them making the comment at one point that, you know, not all of our viewers have internet access. Like, this is their only access to weather information is on TV.
Right. Okay. That is.
What if
that
they don't
true.
Have their TV on? I mean, what?
Yeah.
You know,
but that is true. Like, the if you're on broadcast TV, the FCC mandates that you have to do your little emergency test report. And
right.
What, you know, they can't just do what they want.
Yeah, but I don't know that extends all the way to you have to, you know.
Right. I want
to
watch
have saturation coverage of every thunderstorm that
just
rolls
showing
through.
But map down on the bottom with the red spot.
And maybe this is a topic for a future episode. But overall, I giggle inside slightly. That you're able to look past the greed of trumping up a story for maximum page views and network views, and somehow you're able to not see that and then see all the way to a climate change conspiracy in the liberal media. When really the point of all Superstorm Sandy and oh my god Snowflake Bob is you're trying to get people as panicked as possible to tune into the news. Because when you go, oh my God, Snowflake Bob, you got to tune in.
I can see that. Okay, I mean, to a certain extent,
that's capitalism screwing up information and screwing up people. Hmm. I'm not saying it's a bad system.
Well,
I'm just saying we got to recognize what it is.
It's just as bad as, you know, CNN. Half their stories now are about Lindsay Lohan. And,
right,
you
right.
know,
it's like, entertainment porn. Or
right.
Whatever
it's not news. It's not
right.
something I need to know.
Right.
It's something titillating.
Right.
And
but we've all become
going
idiots.
To cause me to.
Did a great episode about murder porn. Watching, you know, like CSI and all the shows about the spouse killing the. The other.
I hadn't heard it called murder porn.
Yeah, and so the kids put a lock on the TV, and the parents are getting all hacked off about the. Because they both get into bed, and they have like a glass of wine.
I can't watch my murder porn.
Oh, great episode, as you
nice.
Yeah, I've thought of that. I had some,
Andrea's laughing at us.
I had some thought one night when, you know, I was like, heaven forbid, you know, like. Murder not it's not in my family history, but if it was, think how many shows you could not just watch for entertainment,
right?
Because you just like, oh, let's watch Law and Order. This is fascinating. I mean, it's a lot. You CSI, you know.
It is. There's CSI New York, Miami,
right,
Las Vegas.
Right.
I've talked about this before. How. When Janet Jackson whipped out her boob on the Super Bowl, holy cow!
Right.
Yeah.
Not long after that, I was getting ready to leave. It was a Friday night. I was getting ready to go out, but I had one of those shows on, one of the CSI-type shows or something. They had, it was this body that had been hanging in a tree, so it's all decomposed, and the, you know, all the investigators there on the crime scene, and they're looking at it. Well, then the body falls out of the tree, and... So that's okay to
right,
see,
right, right.
And nobody's outraged about that. But
a rotting
whoa.
Corpse is okay.
And I think
but
that's I
don't get.
I submit that's an American thing. It's part of our Puritan nature.
I agree
somehow,
with that.
Somehow,
yeah.
A boob is like we can't deal with that.
Right, that crosses the line.
Right. But like decomposing corpse right. for entertainment purposes.
Show me all
yay
the
America.
Carrion you
right.
want on TV,
right.
but all right. So I think we're done here.
Yep. Rambled quite long. Look at Rob slowly sneaking into the driver's seat.
This feels good.
Yeah. He's in the command chair now because I had to take a potty break. All right.
Wrap it up, Rob. Come on.
All right, guys.
Go for it.
Good episode. Thank you guys for listening. We'd like to thank Granite City Food and Brewery for hosting us. Even though they don't really host us, they just put up with us and never
allow us to pay them for drinking and doing whatever.
That's right. You know, a beer sent our way would be nice, but hey, we're not asking for much. And we'd like to thank Matt for a special guest artist.
Do you have any comments, Matt?
He said like 14 words.
He just came for the food.
All right. Well, thanks. I don't know how we do our goodbye order, so good night.
That's my line, Rob. You always say bye now. What in
all
the
right.
world?
All right, we'll just do the same. All right,
we'll,
bye now.
We'll see you next time.
Good night.